This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Diva Behavior, the podcast. I am your host, Molly Malshine, as always. And welcome to 2021, guys. I'm happy 2020 is over, but as we know, time is a flat circle and nothing actually has changed. I am hoping, though, that this year we will have more celebrity gossip. Last year was a little bit dry, you know? They did the whole Imagine thing with Gal Gadot. You know, the celebrities saw their shadows early in the pandemic, and they realized, to their credit, that if they didn't keep a low profile, we would be sending them to the guillotine, which, good for them, but not so good for us. It was a boring year, celeb-wise. Definitely freed up a lot of time to pay attention to politics and things that quote-unquote matter, but, you know, I think I speak for us all when I say, please, celebrities, give us something this year. We need some sort of, you know, Novocaine for our brains. On that note, this week's episode is very pleasantly numbing and tingly, I would say. It's all about WAGs, which are football wives and girlfriends. Now, this is sort of a British phenomenon that has now turned into a worldwide thing, I think. I think the women who are married to famous athletes have become a subject of fascination all over the world, thanks to Victoria Beckham, Cheryl Cole, and a crew of women in Baden-Baden, Germany in 2006, where it all started. My guest to talk about this is Vix Layton. Vix is a comic, a podcaster, and a PR pro. She is a ray of sunshine, and she's super funny. And she's an expert on all things WAG. And I'm going to post some really fun links for additional WAG reading and WAG slideshows and stuff like that, because the visuals are also really important to go along with this subject. So if you want to do some more WAG research, just check out my social media, which is at Molly Malshine on Twitter and Instagram. Please rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts. Send it to a friend, too, if you really like it. And don't forget to follow Vix. She's on Twitter and Instagram as well. Enjoy the episode.
Some people think divas
is a diva to you. Would you say, are you one?
I never said that.
Diva behavior.
Hey, great gowns, beautiful gowns.
Of course, I don't trust you.
Diva Behavior, the podcast. So I'm here with Vix Layton. Vix, thank you so much for joining me.
I am so excited. Thank you for conceding my campaigning to get on this.
I know. I don't know how it never occurred to me to do the WAGs before. I guess because it wasn't really that big of a thing for me growing up in the US. So you obviously are British. Where exactly are you from?
I'm Wales. So,
oh, you're Welsh.
Yes. Living okay. In England, exiled.
Yes. Sorry for saying you are British. I'm so sorry. I know that's a touchy subject with the Celtic nations.
British is fine. As long as you don't mistake me for an English person, we're good.
Okay, cool. So what made you want to talk about the WAGs today?
It was just such a weird cultural phenomenon. And having thought about it, because I do a joke about this in my stand-up set about a particular WAG moment from last year. And year before last, no, because it's 2021. Yikes. There's a particular moment that brought it all back to me, because they were like the most A-list C-listers of their time. And I think because I was quite young, so I'm 36 now, I was quite young when the WAG phenomenon first really kicked off. So I was quite impressionable, and they were all over magazines. It was before Twitter, I think, really became your channel for gossip and consumer affairs and cultural affairs. So a lot of my information I got from tabloid newspapers, just without even buying them, just reading the front, and gossip magazines. Mm-hmm. And they were probably 60 to 70% of the gossip magazines that I read, all their business. So it was huge. And then it sort of went away. And yeah. These kind of cultural moments are particularly interesting for me. So
yeah, it's really interesting because now the term WAG has sort of, to borrow a term from Wikipedia, it's got a lot of disambiguations where there's WAG TV shows that are even based in America. And there's just, it's like a catch-all term now. But I think what a lot of Americans don't realize is that it all originated at the World Cup in Germany in 2006, right? It was literally like 1 week.
Yeah. And I give it to Victoria Beckham for being a founding member of this, I think, because it combined, David Beckham was like one of the biggest footballers in the world and she was in one of the biggest girl bands in the world. So them coming together as a couple was exciting for a load of reasons. Like men and women could get on board with this. And I think it was that time where it was quite a gendered thing and it's quite a sweeping generalization, but men were obsessed with the World Cup. And women didn't really have a lot to do with that as a traditional stereotype, you know, or even if they did, it wasn't something that everyone, like women were talking about in the way that men were talking about it. So that became the subgenre that like football widow girlfriends could really get on board with, like what bags are being bought, what are they wearing today, who's feuding with who. I think, you know, as a natural gossip myself, like imagining being part of that group and having like all the girly stuff that you had in the playground in high school basically extrapolated out onto a world stage. So it is just exactly the same thing as you're experiencing like in an office or high school where people are talking behind each other's backs and gossiping, but just even no matter how rich, no matter how famous you are, you're still going through all the same thing that every woman goes through. So I think that's the fascinating bit about this for me.
Right. And I think this is, that's the area where sort of C-list celebrities excel because they're not at a point yet where they're looking for privacy. They're just kind of first getting like the WAGs in 2006. This was sort of their first taste of fame, except for Victoria Beckham and Cheryl Cole, obviously. And they were just kind of like, they probably didn't have publicists. They didn't really know well enough to not talk to the press. There were a few, according to the things I've read, there were a few confrontations between members of the press and the WAGs, which is hilarious, throughout the week in Germany. So yeah, I think these women were just, and they were so young. A lot of them, some of them were like,
yeah, because they're like, yeah,
17. She was studying for her GCSEs.
Because there are two genres of WAG, really. There were the girlfriends that were with the footballers when they got famous, when they first got signed. So Colleen Rooney is probably our biggest example of that, but also Thea Walcott's girlfriend at the time was also in the GCSE bracket because all these young guys were being signed. So there were those girlfriends and the girlfriends that leveled up to wife, but there was an element of starter wives about that kind of girl. So you'd see a lot of footballers marrying again, and then they were marrying your glamour models, like slightly like a different type of woman, which is brutal to watch if you've been there supporting somebody all the way through them reaching a peak of professional success to be discarded at the end. That sucks. But and then you had people like Victoria Beckham, which were like the premium, the girls that they, you look at them side by side. David Beckham's not an example of this, but like Rebecca Vardy, for example, you look at her next to Vardy and it's like, how did he get a shot at her? Like men that really living out their fantasy of like the girls that they had on the walls, on their posters. So there's, yeah, two different genres of WAG, I would say. The very young, fresh-faced ones and the glamour model era. So,
yeah, definitely. I think it's really interesting to look at how I think Victoria and Cheryl in 2006 sort of, they gave this glossy imprimatur onto all of the women in the group. So there were all the press surrounding them was saying how they're so glamorous and they're so crazy and they're so like partying so hard. But when you looked at photos of them now from what we're conditioned to seeing from the girls on Love Island and the Kardashians, you're like, oh my God, they have no makeup on. No. Like compared to what we're used to now. And they're just wearing like these long sundresses and their hair's not done and they don't have any makeup on. It's so funny. And back then they were sort of, I think the takeaway is they were not expecting to be photographed this way at all. And they kind of all sort of became that later on, became that like glamazon, right?
And it became a job, I think. Like you said, then they do go and get publicists and it becomes their whole role, because they are as famous as their other half to a degree. And if anything, just like with all women, they are much more likely to be open to scrutiny just for what they look like, as much as anything. It's very shallow. Footballers, it's what they're like as a footballer, how they are as a player, whether they're a good lad. For women, you didn't really get to see them speak.
Mm-hmm.
They very rarely spoke.
True.
They didn't have a media profile beyond being a wife or girlfriend. So interview opportunities were pretty slim. And when they were getting rang up for interview, sometimes it was quite snide. So the gossip magazines would try and write them to look dumb, because we kind of wanted to believe that. I guess the reader doesn't necessarily, because they've got so much, haven't they? It's a complicated thing, because by being the wife or girlfriend of a Premier League football player, they are living a very privileged life. And it's hard to see people's success. And I think a lot of women who are insecure in themselves maybe didn't want to know that they're intelligent and career women as well, because that was too greedy. That's too much. You had to find something. So I think it was easy to fall into a trope that they were earheads or they were stupid, or which is probably unfair to a lot of them. And a lot of them have gone on to be businesswomen in their own right, but that's not what they're ever going to be known for. It's very rare to see a wag get elevated beyond that.
Right. And it's also so unfair, because they were subjected to so much scrutiny of, like you said, sort of these snide pieces being written about them, saying how, you know, they're airheads and everything. And no one's really asking if their husbands are airheads. It's like, they're allowed to just be good at sports, but the women who are married to them aren't allowed to just be glamorous people that are married to guys that are good at sports. It's like, come on, just let them be who they are. Who cares?
And it's a place for that. Exactly. And they didn't sign on to be role models.
Right.
They just happen to have fallen in love with either the right or the wrong person, depending on your perspective, I guess. So they get a lot of benefits and advantages, but it doesn't feel like a life I'd personally want to lead.
I think, okay, I would actually love to be in that life, because
I love it.
It would be so fun. And then you could use it as a springboard for other stuff, I think. That's what's really cool about it.
I would never want my picture in Heat magazine in a swimsuit next to other wives and girlfriends, because I think the big thing you see in that category is comparison.
That's true.
You always see one woman put against another woman, and I would never I would never physically match up to a lot of those girls. So I think that would drive me crazy.
The level of scrutiny would be really hard to deal with. So do you think, I think something that was going on a lot in the 2000s was this level of like classism and elitism within misogyny that what no one was really talking about and no one was really acknowledging. Like, you had all these think pieces in The Guardian and The Telegraph about how terrible role models the wags are and how they're so stupid and women should want more for themselves. And there was no one taking into account the fact that, like, these were working class girls who were, some of them were like 19, like we said, and they didn't ask to be role models. And I just feel like, do you think that the wags would have been treated differently if going into the 2006 World Cup, they happened to be like all pharmacists or something? Well, do you know what I mean?
Like, many people even ask, did anybody do that research? For all we knew, maybe some of them were. And I guess football is a very working class sport. So you see people coming through from maybe rough council estates like Wayne Rooney, who've come from nothing at all. Really, their backgrounds have been, you know, loving backgrounds, but ultimately not a lot of privilege. Whereas if you think about rugby, which is the other big sport that British people absolutely love, or tennis, no one cares. Nobody's looking at their wives and girlfriends in the same way. They're not coming up against the same level of scrutiny, because rugby's quite a middle class sport. It's got working class players in Wales specifically, but I probably couldn't pick out a Welsh rugby player's girlfriend in a lineup, really. Whereas I'd have a good handle on Gareth Bale from the Welsh football team. I'd have a good idea of their wives and girlfriends, literally because they were profiled alongside their partners in the coverage. So it is the only sport that seems to have this level of scrutiny on partners. I just don't think of another sport that's got that.
That's really interesting. And why do you think that is?
It's like you said, there is an element of classist to it. Obviously, Marcus Rashford is probably a big example of that, the way his coverage is at the moment. For everybody who thinks he's a brilliant hero, because in the UK, he's campaigning for kids in poverty to have free school meals and to make sure that they're well fed so they can go on to achieve the sort of success that he's achieving. A lot of football players spend a lot of money and invest a lot into grassroots sports for kids that wouldn't have a chance otherwise. There's so much of that going on, but there's also a snideness about some of his coverage. So, you know, there's a flashiness when he bought his parents their home, which is a beautiful, lovely thing. But there was a snideness about it, like, oh, big football player buys a house for his mum and it's only this amount, even though he earns all this money. And it's the only time that you really see that.
Right. And it's really interesting because we don't scrutinize the actual rich people, like the billionaires who are destroying society. We don't know about their spending, so we don't scrutinize it. And then we only scrutinize the people who are either came from working class and worked their way up, or just, you know, famous people in general. I feel like there, one of the things I read, I forget what paper it was in. It might have been the Telegraph, where this woman wrote about how, oh, isn't it so terrible that women are aspiring to be wags? Isn't it such a shame? Blah, blah, blah. And I don't know. I don't think anyone is genuinely turning down a college scholarship to try and bag a football player. I just don't think that that's happening. I don't think it's a real threat to society. But the funniest thing about the piece is that at the end, she's like, so I went to my local lip injection clinic and interviewed women who were in line waiting for lip injections and asked them what they thought about being wags. And I'm like, okay, so you're the one who's making up this stereotype that they all are like waiting for lip injections. Like, yeah, if you go to any woman who's in line for any medical procedure and say, would you rather have a rich husband or a poor husband? They're probably going to be like, okay, I guess rich.
Like, will I take that golden ticket? Yes, I absolutely will. Yeah,
like, what are you trying to prove? Do you make of that? Like, the people who say that they're bad role models and things like that.
Well, it's been a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, I guess. The first wave, like you said, of WAGs weren't expecting that level of scrutiny, that level of coverage. So they were able to be more natural and just live their best lives. But the more coverage they got, the more pieces that were written about them going, oh, Colleen ate all the pies at Christmas, or this girl looks really tired, the more they're likely to go, actually, I will go and have surgery because I'm tired of this and I want to look my best every time I step outside the front door. So they'd be criticized for looking really glam and having their faces fully done at like 9 a.m. And that was a trope of WAGs. They were always constantly glamorous. But if they were putting the bins out in their pants, that's the photograph that would be run instead. So you don't really leave people with a lot of option with that. So the media created that version of them and then ran with it because it was easy and it's punching down. And so it's easy for a lot of people to feel like they're better than them. And it's comforting to people to feel like they're better than them because they're seeing them on holiday, living their best life. They're very jealous. There's got to be something. It's an easy thread to pull, I think, which is quite unfair. I've had to kind of examine my own behavior since I signed up to do this, because I was as gleeful as everybody else when you'd see a bad photo of somebody or someone would come across badly, because it's jealousy, I think, and I had to confront that. A little bit jealous.
I do that all the time with people. Like, there are some celebrities that I just can't even look at their stuff because I'm like, okay, I know I'm jealous of them and I'm resentful and it's my problem and I need to just remove myself from their narrative.
I'm not my best self in this scenario.
Yeah. Something else I think that people didn't realize, at least in the World Cup in Germany. What is the name of that town? It was called Baden-Baden, right? Or Baden-Baden. I literally don't know how to say it. For people who don't know, basically at the World Cup in Germany, David Beckham was the captain and he said, I want wives and girlfriends to come. We need that support. So they all stayed in this spa town of Baden-Baden. And this is what turned into this media circus around all the wives and girlfriends. And they all hung out all the time. Actually, Victoria and Cheryl sort of distanced themselves from them, but no one really noticed that they were distancing themselves, I guess. Everyone put them all in a group together. But Victoria, I think, was kind of like trying to be like, no, I'm like a little bit of a cut above. But
yeah, and Cheryl, to Cheryl, it would have been leveling up to be seen as friends with Victoria Beckham. Yeah. So for her, there was something in it to be seen sitting next to her from a media profile point of view, and for all of them, whereas Victoria had nothing to prove. And we've all been on that hen bachelorette party. You don't get on with everybody. And the idea that they should operate like this homogenous group that all were best friends, that would never happen. You'd never find 12, 13 women that all got on together, particularly in a kind of, it's just, that just isn't, it's not a natural fit. So any kind of small skirmish that was made into a big deal, like all wags at war, it's like, of course they were. If you spent that amount of time with any woman, like it's a pressure cooker.
Absolutely. And the other thing, like you said, that I think people don't realize is it was basically like a Hindu atmosphere because they were, their freaking boyfriends and husbands are in the World Cup. Like they were partying hard. I don't think they would normally be, apparently one night they bought 70 bottles of Moet, like for one table. And I don't think they would normally be doing that. I think it was because they were literally having the time of their lives, because it's once every few years you get to do this. But I think it was put across as if this was them all
every day. It's like judging us by like us just on our birthday every year, like just on like our 21st birthday. Like that is you. That is your whole personality decided. That is your way of life. I'd love it. But
And I think it was a perfect storm because, like you said, with Victoria Beckham being there, she was one of the most famous people in the world at that point. Her and David were like at their peak golden couple status. And she had Cheryl with her, which increased the attention even more. And then just to have this other like gaggle of women around, it just was irresistible, I think. And I think if Victoria wasn't there and Cheryl wasn't there, it wouldn't have been the same thing, right?
And it was never the same again. If you think about, like you said, it was like the apex of fame, somebody who was world famous, like for, you know, what was a very like cartoonized feminism almost, like this girl power movement, world famous, established on her own with one of the biggest, most famous men in the world. Like that was, like you said, an absolute perfect storm. And we've never seen it again. When you think of how, when David Beckham allegedly cheated with Rebecca Lewis, that was like global front page news everywhere. I can't think of another footballer and their wife that this would be front page news, like primetime TV. They interviewed the other woman on primetime TV here. Everyone watched it.
I did not know about that.
Yeah, it's everyone watched it. She got dragged to hell. Like her life was ruined. This woman who was his personal assistant when he was in Spain playing. And it was huge. She was like one of the most hated women in the world for such a long time, which just captures the spirit of that movement. Everybody felt like they owned a piece of the Beckhams. You know, we believed in it. We wanted it to be true. Like, so there was like, you know, you were 50-50. You were either, I don't believe in love anymore because I wanted to believe in them, and now there's a crack in their perfect relationship. Or you were the other side of it going, I knew this was too good to be true. This is the thing. This is the thing that's going to break them. And kind of reveling in it. And it didn't help that Rebecca Lewis, the other woman, was not likable. She wasn't the nanny, you know, the sort of nanny that was taking advantage character, or the fresh faced girl, or the PA. She had that kind of ruthless hardness about her. You could tell she didn't take any nonsense. So she wasn't a sympathetic figure. She was a temptress that stole David Beckham and led him astray, which we all know that's not a thing.
Yeah. Oh my God. I had no idea that happened. That's so sad for her. That sucks.
And it was years and years and years and years. And then the Beckhams, every photo they took where they were holding hands, they were like, oh, holding hands to show that, or there was a body language person talking about they're holding hands. They look happy, but you can tell because of her eyebrows quirking away that secretly she's really angry. And like, it
don't
made
you
news.
Body language experts.
Yeah, the dress that shows she's showing him what he's missing. Like every single thing was analyzed. The shoe height, like every tiny piece of their relationship was dragged up in a way that feels uncomfortable now. And I'm not sure, I'm not sure national press would be allowed to do that to that detail, because we've all got a little bit more of a moral sense of what is right and what belongs to us and what doesn't belong to us.
Yeah. I think the thing is, I think we would do that now for a scandal that we felt a little bit better about casting judgment over. Whereas I think back then, if someone cheated, we would demonize the other woman and no one really thought, some people would think twice about it, but today we would try not to demonize the other woman. But then if it's something like, for example, Hilaria Baldwin last week with her fake Spanish accent, I think that's the kind of thing now that's going to be front page of every paper.
Because
that's what we're fixating on as a society, is these questions of identity and race and ethnicity. And that's what's going to be the new like cheating scandal, you know?
It's safe for us to judge those people. So it's a perfect thing. Like, because as like everybody, nobody wants to be on the wrong side of the right take anymore, particularly when everybody's spouting out their views at speed over Twitter. No one wants to say the wrong thing or not be in step with everybody else. So I think, yeah, it is safer to find something that is absolutely ridiculous, that isn't, no one's really hurt by this. People have been duped by this, but nobody has been really hurt by it. Whereas affairs, like if you look at Strictly, the show is a huge phenomenon here. It's really strange to witness how they treat the people that fall in love on there, because it's this whole romantic Cinderella type narrative of they're working really close together, and they want you to believe that the sparks are flying because they want you to watch. They want you to believe the dances. So when somebody inevitably leaves their partner, it's kind of more of a love story where they're the heroes and the discarded partner is kind of more of a sad person rather than the wronged person, or the kind of old trope of like a woman scorned. So it's weird to see that narrative play out now, where it's not just this. Well, again, though, like the guys in Strictly, I think, get away with a lot more than the girls, because the guys in Strictly are, oh, they've fallen in love, whereas the women, they're temptresses.
So why do you think it is that on Strictly and in so many other situations, we often define women in relationship to the men involved? Like with the whole WAG thing, I feel like so much of the feminist backlash and pushback for the WAG movement, if we want to call it a movement for lack of a better word, has been saying we shouldn't define women by the men that they're with. And on one hand, I'm like, yeah, obviously we shouldn't do that. But on the other hand, it's like, okay, well, you have a group of women who share a set of traits, and the only reason they're together is because they're all dating guys that are on the same team. So to me, it's like not that offensive to define them by that, because it's the reason why they all know each other. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I can see. Well, I guess it depends in what kind of context it's used. Like to define them as that's the group that we're talking about, WAGs, I guess that's fine because they are, for that is factual, isn't it? But to use it as more of a slur, like when it's like, oh, that's real WAG behavior, if you've maybe bought a handbag that's really expensive, or you're wearing makeup that's deemed too trashy, I guess it depends what you mean about it.
That would be a different thing. Yeah.
So
yeah.
But I think, like you said, there was this notion mainly from people who I don't think had ever spoken to anybody who'd been the partner of a sports person, that this was a way of life that women were aspiring to, that they were leaving school dreaming of meeting a footballer. But it's just like, it's a modern day fairy tale. I don't think it's any different to, you know, it's what we as women have been conditioned to do. We were all shown books where you waited for your handsome prince to come along. Like it's just a modern version of that, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's no trend piece being written about how terrible it is when, like, aristocratic girls are looking for aristocratic husbands with money, like, because it's just like, yeah, of course, why wouldn't they? But for some reason, when it's, like, a working-class girl, it becomes...
Well, yeah, it's like Kate Middleton versus Meghan Markle. Like, Kate Middleton was the right amount of not royal. She was very middle, upper class, you know, came from an affluent background. Everybody loved that, but Meghan Markle was not the perfect princess because she'd been married before. She had her own career. She was normal. She'd lived a normal life up until that. And they were treated very differently. But to a degree, neither of them were treated like they were marrying up for ambition necessarily by the general public. It was a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's so interesting to see like who we get angry at about that and who we don't.
I think Jordan kind of became the lightning rod of everything that people wanted to believe about all WAGs.
Okay. Tell us about Jordan for our American listeners. I only know her because Perez Hilton in the 2000s was obsessed with her and he would post about her every day.
Well, she was a glamour model. So glamour models, there was an era, there's the Sun newspaper, which is a tabloid newspaper over here. So it's kind of, it's a working class read. It's very sensationalist. It's kind of trashy. And they have on page 3, they would have a topless girl. That was just like the thing that they did. Yeah. Their page 3 model was a job. And it would be somebody who, so Jordan, for example, and they just literally there, like Jordan, 19 from, like for no reason, it just the page 3 girl was a thing. And I think somewhere along the line, Wags got aligned with the page 3 girl because a lot of page 3 glamour models who were in calendars, there was this era of lads mags as well. I don't know if you had that in the US.
I heard about those.
That were just literally pictures of women, like wish fulfillment for men. They had some clothes on, so it wasn't top shelf material, but not a lot of clothes. So,
oh, you have that in like Maxim.
But it was like a genre down. So if you think there's like magazines like Cosmopolitan and GQ and Maxim, Maxim was like their higher end. And then, you know, those gossip mags that you see on the newsstands that are really cheap to buy, they're flimsy. There was a whole subgenre of those magazines that, and it became a career for those women, pretty girls with big boobs. If you made it onto page 3, if you made it into this circuit, you're a poster girl. And that was it was a modeling job. So it was like being a pit girl at the Grand Prix, for example. It was that kind of job. But we're not okay. So society wise, we're not okay with the idea of women selling what we deem to be their assets. It's the same way, like, sex work is in any capacity is not really something that is, it's not deemed societally acceptable. So, like, things like OnlyFans, we're still, there's a lot of judgment of that, and it still feels quite easy to judge. And that was like a softer version of that in a lot of people's eyes, so particularly for middle class. The kind of people writing about Wags were also the kind of people writing about glamour models. And Jordan was probably she was the Victoria Beckham of glamour models. And she was naturally absolutely stunning. And she's had a lot of work done over time, but stunning, but had enough of a business brain about her and enough of a sense of PR. Like if she was doing a PR job behind the scenes, she'd probably be an absolute maestro that she set up a lot of opportunities for herself. Mm-hmm. And page 3 girls ended up in the same clubs as footballers. And it was an easy pairing because they were beautiful. They were glamorous in that kind of way. They were wish fulfillment for some of the footballers. So those pairs were quite common, the glamour model and the footballer. But those were probably the bottom. They were the most famous of the Wags to a degree, in a lot of ways, but also the ones that were the easiest to judge. I imagine if there was a hierarchy of Wags where Victoria Beckham was on the top in terms of aspiration, the glamour models were probably down the bottom. And then everybody in the middle was deciding which way to go.
Yeah. You think the glamour models would be even like below the hometown girlfriends, the childhood girlfriends?
From a press point of view, probably yes, because they're young, wholesome girls who are supporting their men. Whereas glamour models, again, there was this, women who get what they want don't get good press.
Right. That's such a good way of summing it up. That's exactly what it is. Especially if you're like getting what you want from like a financial point of view of, oh, I'm using my assets to make money. I'm not having someone else make money off of it for me. So Jordan and Posh Spice had a feud, right?
It was exactly that, though. It was, I think, Posh Spice didn't want to ever be in a category with Jordan for whatever reason.
Right.
Like, I think the fact that like they got all lumped together.
Yeah, like Posh is the Beyonce in this situation and Jordan's the Kim Kardashian, where it's like, okay, you guys aren't exactly the same, but you're sort of occupying the same stratosphere. And one of you is very excited about that. And one of you is very angry about it.
Exactly. That is exactly it. So they would take, because the press was anxious for these kind of stories, because they were, you know, both of them sold. So if they were on the cover of something, you were going to buy it. Before like online press became a thing, clickbait, it was which cover was going to sell the most units. So any story with them would sell, and stories with the both of them on would definitely sell, and they were the water cooler moments. So little things could be taken out of context. So even like looking at someone the wrong way, like getting a photo where maybe Victoria Beckham's like rolling her eyes and Jordan's over the other side of the room doing nothing and it isn't even related. So this feud was created. I don't know how real it was at the start, but it did sort of become real because Jordan was going out with Dane Bowers, who was on Victoria Beckham's first solo single. Okay. And so they became like a social unit in a different way. So, and I think whenever, you know, when you're two different types of woman as well, both very attractive, both, you know, the hottest in your circle, I can't imagine that conversation. I would have loved to have seen it, but I can't imagine that conversation at the, like at the single launch party where David Beckham's there. Dane Bowers was in this boy band called Another Level at the time. So again, boy bands, page three pairings, very common at the time. But and Jordan had had a lot of boyfriends as well, which is something that, again, she got heavily judged for. Perhaps no more boyfriends than your average woman. You know, right. You don't always meet the right one straight away. But because all her boyfriends have been publicized by press, it gave her a certain vibe. Whereas Victoria Beckham, her first known boyfriend was David.
Right. That's so true. And Victoria has always been so good at branding. Like, she has kept herself aspirational, even from the days of the Spice Girls. Like, she sort of occupied that role of, I'm actually too good for this. And
and I can't sing, but I'm okay with that.
And I'm not that into being in this band.
I can't sing, but I don't want to, but I'm still here. But they're both, in their way, really good marketers, but they're marketing to different audiences.
That's really interesting. I really liked the Danielle Lloyd and Nicola McLean feud as well.
But I think, but these things, I wonder how much of it is real and how much of it is dreamed up by their PR people.
I know. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Because they both got coverage from it. So you can imagine both sitting, like, having a wine in the old times when you could go to the pub going, do you know what, we could get some press here.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's mutually,
like, maybe they weren't even friends enough for her to be invited to the wedding. Like,
right.
It's so hard to make those decisions.
To tell the listeners, what happened was, in one of them, Nicola claimed on Celebrity Big Brother that she'd been at Danielle's wedding to Jamie O'Hara, who I guess is a footballer, right? So then Danielle got pissed, I guess, and she went on, and by that I mean angry, not drunk. American version of pissed, went on Twitter and said, Nicola McLean was not at my wedding, just to confirm, which is a hilarious thing to do. Like,
why bother?
Yeah.
Like, why bother to clarify that?
Just to confirm, exclamation point. And then she wrote another tweet that says, and if Nicola turned up in the night, she was definitely a wedding crasher. But then Nicola said that she was there. She said, yeah, I'd really lie about where I was on the evening of Danielle and Jamie's wedding. I need to lie about that. My life is that dull that I genuinely lie about being at a wedding. That's a quote she gave to the Daily Mail. And then she said, you're Danielle Lloyd, not effing Beyonce. So I mean, just love
fair.
Yeah.
Why would you lie about that, knowing you could be so easily caught out? I feel like of the two, one story is much more believable. Because you're saying it on national TV, not to a friend that you're trying to impress. Like, that will be found out. But did anyone ever come forward to say they did or didn't see her there?
I don't know. I don't know how that ever resolved itself. I would love to know.
But do you know what? Like we were saying, there are different tiers of WAG. Like, I don't care about either of them. So I didn't really follow that. I wasn't interested.
Right.
I think, yeah.
The thing is, like, they know, because a lot of the WAGs complain about being called WAGs and being put into this box. And obviously, you know, every person is different. And I'm sure some of them like it and some of them don't. But anyone who courts a feud with someone else who's in that category is putting it in the public's head that this is who I am. This is who she is. We're part of this milieu. And this is what our drama is. So it's like, it's a branding choice to tweet something nasty about someone like that.
Yeah, it's you're partisan to it. And I think everybody gets judged by, in that way, it's like everybody is judged by the worst version, like the most extreme versions of anything. It's easier to judge that than the people who are more towards the middle. So it's easier to go, yeah, they're all chasing fame. They're all desperately courting the tabloids because, you're all judged by the worst, the lowest standard. And yeah, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of wags that did want to be in the paper because they're insecure and they weren't getting the same coverage as anybody else. And it is a job. And I think that's the Colleen Rooney and the Rebecca Vardy story last year. I think that was what was so interesting about that, because there is currency in these stories and being the person that sells it in. So,
yeah. So tell us the spark notes of that. I think everyone probably remembers this, Wagatha Christie. It was when Colleen Rooney wrote this long thing on Instagram where she explained how she, through process of elimination, did like a sting operation and found out that Rebecca Vardy was selling or leaking information about her to the press. So this was like a crazy story, sort of broke the internet. Why do you think it was so big?
It's a lot of people's interests aligned in this one, like in the Venn diagram of people that we like to judge, pitting one wag that, because Colleen Rooney has got a really good record, apart from forgiving Wayne Rooney for cheating on her. Colleen Rooney's got a clean record for just, she married him young, she supported him, she's just been quietly minding her own business. She doesn't appear to court the press, but she doesn't shy away from it. She gives people enough of her that she, I think, on her own, gets things on her own terms. So they can have the moments of privacy. They can tell the stories they want to tell in the press. So she's got it right, but she's been doing this for so long that I think she learned by trial and error, and she's had a terrible time. Like Wayne Rooney is not a nice man, or he's certainly a man that has made terrible choices. But so she is liked. Rebecca Vardy and her husband, they aren't likable people.
Really?
Unfortunately.
Why would you say that is?
Well, like they are, like, again, there's a very working class vibe to them. They just give off the vibe that they are in it for everything that they can get, I think. That's the impression that they've given people, whether it's from brand associations they've done, the amount of coverage they're getting, where they're getting the coverage. There was a sense that there was, you know, rumors coming out that he wasn't that nice a guy. They don't have the same love built in that years and years and years of Rooney being an amazing player and her being a dutiful wife have built up. So she's one of the few wags that cut through for me, because I stopped paying attention to them because I stopped buying glossy magazines that told me what I should be interested in when I became more into Twitter and curating my own lists. So they stopped being of interest when I stopped being led by whatever was in print press, I think.
I still love a glossy mag, though.
And me, on a train journey. Oh, it's perfect. Sometimes I do need to be told what I should be interested in, but I tend to avoid the very lower end ones that are spats. That, because I work in PR as well, you get really cynical about what's real and what's not.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, oh, Lauren Goodyear, who's like from this show, The Only Way Is Essex, is caught in this lingerie shop buying lingerie. It's like, she's not been caught. Her PR person has rung up and said she's going to this lingerie shop. The lingerie is free because the lingerie shop wants the coverage. This is what's happened here. There is nothing. We're all complicit in a racket, basically, that they're running. So I think the more I knew PR, because I've been doing it for about 12 years now, the less interested I was in these manufactured stories. But the Rebecca Vardy, Colleen Rooney thing felt real.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that Colleen released it, it was like a whodunit. It was perfectly PR'd. Like even the statement that she wrote, like she must have worked on this. She had people work on it. It was a perfect narrative. It was a perfect story. It made her the hero. It cast somebody as a clear villain. So basically Colleen Rooney had been putting Instagram stories up and restricting to find out who was selling stories to the press, had been restricting who could see them so she could find out who could be the person sharing. So she's got this inner circle of close friends on Instagram. And she started serving up stories just to Rebecca Vardy on things that weren't true. And they were appearing in the press. Mm-hmm. And that is how, in her mind, she worked out who was selling stories on her and who wasn't the real friend. So Rebecca Vardy is disputing this. She's saying it's absolutely not true. And
she said, I didn't need the money, which it doesn't mean true. That you're getting money for it. It's just... you could be exchanging this information for favorable coverage.
Exactly. Or to repress negative coverage. If you start feeding a gossip journalist, they're not going to bite the hand that feeds them. So if they've got slightly negative stories about you, they'd rather run something else because they want that pipeline. So it might not even be about getting positive press. It might be about repressing negative press. It's like a lot of coming out stories where somebody will say, a newspaper will say, we got the exclusive. They got the exclusive because they rang up and said, we're going to tell this story with or without you. So tell it in your own words or we'll tell it for you. So there's a lot of that kind of bargaining going on in press. So, which people don't really understand because they don't understand how the stories get there. And so, and because they don't understand that that is an infrastructure that is working for a lot of people, not just Rebecca Vardy. Rebecca Vardy is probably being punished by everybody for doing something that a lot of people are doing that Colleen herself might well be doing, to earn a bit of extra money or to earn favor with the press. But because Rebecca Vardy is the first person that for most people has been put in mind of picking up the phone to sell the story of a friend, she's got the full weight of everybody's betrayal, the people that are believing these stories. So she tricked everybody.
Right.
But actually she's just doing something that was fairly standard to media people in the public eye.
That's so true that every celebrity does stuff like that. And it just shows how bad it is to have like a thirsty reputation in the entertainment industry. The minute people get a whiff of like desperation about you, that you're like courting fame, even though every celebrity is courting fame, if you're showing your work, people will inherently not trust you. And
exactly that,
yeah, it's just so hard. It must be so hard if you are famous to stay in the public eye without looking thirsty like Rebecca Vardy.
And she couldn't even defend herself without people saying, oh, and now she's selling the story. What a surprise. It's like, of course she is. She's had her reputation completely dragged, whether or not she did it. Of course she'd want a right to reply. But that created a whole new story that went for weeks and weeks and weeks. Colleen's side said this. A person in Colleen's camp said this. A person in Rebecca's camp said this. And that sells news. That sells clicks. That sells advertising. So
what do you think made Colleen want to do this? Why did she go public with it?
Well, there's two sides to it, I guess. It could be she wanted the publicity and it did work out for her. Like I said, it was beautifully executed as a campaign, as a comms campaign.
Yeah.
She had everybody exactly where she wanted them. But she could have just been absolutely furious. Can you imagine someone selling stories about your family?
I know.
She could have just been absolutely raging.
Yeah. I wonder if there was also some sort of like, maybe Rebecca had something really big on her and she knew that Rebecca could go public with this thing. So she needed a way to destroy Rebecca's credibility before that happened.
Because who's going to believe her? She could say anything about Colleen now. Who's going to believe her? Because Colleen could have just fed her this line. Another thing I hated about this narrative, though, and again, it's quite a sexist thing. So many people tweeting and saying, oh, girls, just go out for a glass of Chardonnay and just sort it out. Why have you taken it to court? Can you ever see men, like if a man had been slandered like Rebecca Vardy in any other way than like through the tabloids, can you see anyone diminishing it to that level, to the point where like, oh, just go to the pub and sort it out? It is so sexist that it's been taken. Something that is quite big, like reputationally, that is so damaging to be somebody who can't be trusted in what is your circle of friends. Like that's a huge deal for anyone to, because who's going to tell Rebecca Vardy anything? Even people who think they're her friends may have seen stories about themselves and thought she probably did it. So in terms of the damage this has done to her day-to-day life, it's probably incalculable. And people are saying they're making a fuss about nothing and like, why are they taking it to court? Why are they wasting their money? I can see why, because it's pretty gross. And I just think it is very much, oh, look, women's problems, backstabbing women. It's done none of us any good, really.
Yeah.
Women.
I know. Whose side would you say you're on, Colleen or Rebecca?
I'm prone towards Colleen because I feel like I've known her for years. Like she's slightly younger than me, but we were close enough in ages that we've kind of come through life stages together. Like I've always been sort of vaguely aware of what she's up to, like a little soap opera that's going on. And I do feel like when Wayne Rooney cheated on her, I felt hurt on her behalf. And I hated to see her go through that and to come out of the other side. I felt proud that she'd come out the other side. So I feel weirdly protective of her.
Okay.
I just think their family's had enough. So I was like, initially I was like, yeah, Agatha Christie. But you know, thinking just in the run-up to this, and because it became a joke in my set, I did start to think about it in a different way. And it's like, oh, actually, you know, haven't we all been the Rebecca Vardy in our friendship group at some time? Because information is social capital.
Mm-hmm.
I can't ring up the Sun about somebody on Facebook whose boyfriend, as far as I'm concerned, is clearly cheating on them because they're doing too many nights for their job. I can tell my WhatsApp group of like old school friends and you know, it sparks a conversation, and that's what we're all looking for now. We're looking for that kind of, we're just looking for engagement everywhere, aren't we? Like,
yeah,
validation.
Yeah. See, I think I would be team Rebecca because I have sympathy for any woman whose reputation is being dragged through the mud, because women more so than men, once you get tagged with a negative label like that, it just follows you around forever. But the thing I didn't like was her response to it was very gaslighting. It was like,
yeah,
how could you do this to me when I'm pregnant? And it's like, what? That has nothing to do with anything.
That's not relevant.
Yeah. So that was like, ooh, you are a snake in the grass. Because like you said, most famous people are playing this game at some point or another of playing their information off of the tabloids information. So like, she could have just said, look, like everyone does this. Yeah. Like Colleen did this XYZ times to me, and it would have been fine. But yeah, I guess that was the only thing that made me like turn against her. So how
it just felt like fun, and you forget that it's real people, because they aren't real people in my life. It just like everybody needed something to cheer them up, and it felt like fun, and you forgot that there were two real people at the center of it. I was just as bad retweeting memes, like I was just as bad at the time, and then you walk away from it and go, oh, actually this is not nice, is it? It's not a nice situation that we're making fun of. This is not lighthearted. It's not a soap opera. This is real people. But we just don't treat them like that because they have the privilege of being footballers' wives. So
that's so true. Do you think that the Wags were, you know, predecessors to the Kardashians or any other modern day celebrities?
Yeah, I think they were the original influencers. Like, I remember Juicy Couture tracksuits because like all the wives and girlfriends were wearing them and they were everywhere. I knew loads of girls that had them. Like, I didn't really know anything about designer bags other than the bags that maybe Victoria Beckham had or Cheryl. Like, they were tastemakers to a degree, for they were a little bit over the top and they were a little bit trashy. And I guess, again, there's this kind of working class thing where you wear your status. And you see it a lot. So like a lot of like middle class, upper class people, like I went to a really nice place for my birthday brunch in between lockdowns. we went to Duck and Waffle, which is a really nice premium restaurant for brunch. And I was there fully dressed up, even though it was 10 o'clock in the morning because it was my birthday. And I was surrounded by people that were just in like sweatpants, because like the truly rich people, they don't feel the need to be seen to have leveled up. You know, they don't dress up for that kind of thing. And I felt like they were kind of judging me because I had. And I think there's an element of that because, you know, when you're new to money, it is exciting, isn't it? You do buy the stuff that you dreamed about buying. And why wouldn't you? You're allowed. You've got it. But there was something deemed quite gaudy about their approach, about their purchases of bags, about the shoes they were wearing. And it's, again, it felt like punching down a little bit. It felt a bit classist. But for better or worse, it was their outfits that were being deconstructed in the women's magazines. Like, oh, the, you know, what were they all wearing this night? Or the big night out that they had where they were all like rolling around in champagne. This dress was from here. This dress was from here. And they were influencers, and they were probably the first wave. And it was like social media hadn't really taken off in that way. It was not immediate around 2006. It was very much that no one's putting a Facebook status up about this.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as quick fire. So things were a lot slower. And it was, you got it from magazines, you got it from newspapers. So yeah, I would definitely say they were the predecessors to people like the Kardashians, for sure.
Yeah. I decided recently that I'm not going to get mad at people for being flashy with their clothes anymore, unless they're also like destroying the ocean with plastic or something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I might get mad. Okay, I'll get mad at Kylie Jenner because she has too much money and she doesn't do anything good with it. But other than that, I'm just going to get mad at like actual billionaires and not like reality stars who are just having fun, you know, because I drive myself nuts with that. I'll just be like, oh my God, why is this person like wearing these $600 boots when there's like a pandemic going on? But now yeah. I'm just, yeah, I don't know.
But if they can afford it and it makes them happy, sure. Because they're probably not, they wouldn't have spent that money on the greater good in any way anyway. So who cares whether it's shoes, whether it's a Wagyu beef burger that costs $1,000. Like, at least it's a tangible thing.
So true. So are there any wags right now who are still relevant besides obviously Victoria Beckham, the queen?
I can't think of any. I did have a little think if anything sparked the top of my head, but I think there are so many choices now for that level of celebrity that you can follow, because reality TV followed that quite swiftly. So Big Brother, those people immediately became stars. Like The Only Way Is Essex came along and those people became that kind of star. But then Made in Chelsea, then all these other TV programs, and it's overcrowded now. Mm-hmm. So in the same way, I probably in the first season of Love Island knew everybody's name. I don't know anyone's name there now. I just vaguely know the winners. I guess it's progress in a way, but they're competing with the same space that all the other C-list celebrities are. So,
and what would you call that space? I guess it's just like people who are slightly elevated into fame from obscurity, right? It's like people who aren't superstars. They're just like one rung above me and you.
Yeah, and it could be anyone. Again, like the first season of The X Factor, if you won that, you were set for life. People like Leona, Little Mix, the first wave of that, we made them superstars. And I can't remember who won the last few. Like, just not interested anymore. I think because people can get Twitter famous now and Instagram famous and now TikTok famous, or I don't know what's going on there. But
there's
so many ways to get a following that aren't traditional press, true. That all of our attention's been diverted. So in a way, I wouldn't expect to see anybody as big, as universally big as Victoria Beckham, as Jordan, probably ever again, because there is no need. Like, we've got so many channels now. It used to be 4 TV channels here. And so you'd watch one of them and everyone would watch it. So people in those shows would become overnight successes, but that's not true anymore. There aren't enough cultural moments to make people think you can get famous, but you won't stay, I think, unless people really take you to their heart. And you see that with a couple of the Love Island people who've given enough of their time and been interesting enough or enough of a mess that they've stuck, and they might be 10 seasons ago and they're still getting more coverage than the people from last season who maybe were a little bit quieter, a little bit nicer, a little bit less controversial. So it's an open field for influence, but I don't think you won't see a lot more. You won't see megastars at that level again, because the world's just not that way anymore.
I know. Doesn't it make you sad? It makes me sad.
It does, yeah. But it's also, I guess, quite liberating.
Yeah. I just miss the monoculture. Like, it was so fun having those water cooler moments that just don't really seem like they're happening as much anymore. I mean, partially because we don't speak to people outside of our house now.
I think that's why things like the Colleen Rooney, Rebecca Vardy thing did become so big. We all knew them. Like, we all knew them for some reason, even if it was really vague. We knew them. We all knew them. We all had a reason to know them. Men knew them. Women knew them. And that's when you really do see these talking points. And they do occasionally happen, but it's rare, like you said. And I do mourn the loss of that.
Yeah, same. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Vix, and talking to me about this. I just want to write like a term paper about WAGs now.
Me too. I did a bit of research this afternoon. I really enjoyed it. I want to write one too.
Yeah. Like, also, there's no good, if anyone needs a good Instagram idea, there should be a WAG fashion Instagram account of like throwback 2000s fashion, don't you think?
I think I follow a couple. I'll try and find them and I'll send them to you and you can put them in the notes.
Okay, yes, please send them to me. I would love that. And where can everyone find you?
Well, on Twitter, I'm at PR Vix. That's probably, I like to think that's my best work. I don't know if it's true.
It's very good work. It's very good work.
It's VixL247 on Instagram. That's a lot of selfies and pictures of my cat. Mm-hmm. And I do a podcast that's a female-fronted comedy panel show, which is fairly rare. Called The Comedy Arcade. So yeah, it's comedians basically doing competitive anecdotes. So I pick a load of topics out of a bingo ball and read them out, and you have to jump in if you've got a story. And it's really fun because people can't use material for it because you don't let them prepare. So you get a lot of stories from like your favorite comedians that you won't have heard before. So it's, yeah, I've really enjoyed doing that. So that's The Comedy Arcade. You can Google it. It's everywhere.
So fun. Well, thank you so, so much. This was great.
Some people think Diva is a
diva to you. Would you say, are you one?
I never said that.
Diva behavior.
Hey, great gowns, beautiful gowns.
Of course, I don't trust you.
Diva Behavior, the podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.